This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the MLB Pipeline Podcast. I'm Jason Ratliff here with Jim Callis. No Jonathan Mayo. He's big leaguing us. He's out in Arizona, spring training, running around, talking to players, getting some FaceTime on MLB Network, which Jim just finished doing.
And I'll do again. I will head back out and do some more of it this weekend.
Yeah, but you're at least going to make an effort to be on the podcast while you're doing that. Jonathan, on the other hand, although to be fair, he did conduct the interview with Robbie Snelling that we're going to play for you here in a few minutes. So he'll be a part of today's episode, despite his absence right now. But hey, the top 30 prospects lists are out. So that's we want to talk about that. As we're recording, two-thirds of them are out, rolling those out by division this week. AL and NL East to start on Monday. AL and NL Central on Tuesday. AL and NL West on Wednesday. That's all leading up to the spring breakout roster reveal on Thursday. That's Thursday morning on MLB Network, 11 a.m. Eastern. You can watch that one-hour show to reveal all those rosters, and obviously you'll be able to find all those rosters on MLB.com, the club sites, MLB.com/pipeline, MLB.com/spring breakout. They'll be all over the place. So we'll talk a little spring breakout later and talk about some of Jim's travels in his first stint spring training. First, we want to dig into these top 30 prospects list a little bit. And Jim, you and Jonathan and Sam have been working on these for a long time. We put out the top 100 list back in January. Seems like ages ago now, about a month and a half ago, I guess. A little over a month ago. But these things, and you know, I think we always try to contextualize, the amount of work relative. The top 100 is kind of a different animal. There are 100 players on that list. The top 30, team top 30 list, 900 players. And it's sort of an entirely different process for you guys, right?
Yeah. I mean, the top 100 guys, I mean, we get a lot of feedback and we talk to people, but like, you know, those guys, like if we had to, not that we do, we could probably write the top 100 scouting reports without talking to anybody, just based on everything we heard the previous year. The top 30s, I mean, I don't necessarily know that we all go about them exactly the same way, but I'd say like for me, at least when I'm doing a top 30, I try to have 45 or 50 prospects in mind. Not that I'm breaking down every tool of every guy, because you know some of them. But I try to, you know, I'm highly organized. I'll divide them up by position and kind of have them in rough order by position, and then try to give them a really good going over with a source with a team. Then I'll kind of formulate them into a rough order, like an actual top 30 and guys who just missed, and then run that by two or three more people with the team, and then two or three people outside the organization. And it's both a blessing and a curse these days. Like, we have so much more information in terms of data and video and statistics that you can look at. So all that is involved. I would like to know what our word count is on those blurbs. Like I know I probably write mine a little bit long, but I'll bet, you know, I wrote up 300 players. I bet that was like 75,000 words I've written in the, you know, I actually counted. I think I had 41 or 42 guys were on the top 100 or the top 10 position lists. But I think I, so that left me like 258 or so. So what's that wind up being? Like almost like 65,000 words, I think I wrote on the top 30 reports in February. Like it's a lot of words, but it's a lot of fun. I mean, it's one of those things, like even when you're slammed with these things, I always say like, one, it's baseball. Like I have been doing ranking prospects in one way or another for, I guess this is year 36, and I still enjoy it. And I like trying to figure out like who are guys I don't know about that are good. And, you know, why is this guy better than that guy? It's still fun. And like, even on the days where it's late and you're trying to crank out some more reports, it's still baseball. And I, to this day, have never met anybody who's, you know, finds out what I do and is like, oh man, that job sounds like it sucks. Like everybody's like, that sounds like fun. So even in the days where it's a lot of work, it's still fun. And I like gathering the information and just talking prospects. I was going to say I could do that year round, and I guess we do. So, but, yeah, no, it's nice that they're done. Now I take a deep breath, focus on spring breakout and spring training, and then dive back into the draft pretty soon.
Yeah, I had, we had joked that, for this episode, we were just going to simply read off the 900 names slowly, and that would be the entire episode, the 30 top 30 list. But instead, we had Jim do math on just, we'll just have you do calculations for the entire, for an hour.
You know, and I'm getting a message here from Jonathan Jason. He said that he volunteers. He wants to rank all 900 prospects in order by himself.
Okay.
He's going to use his downtime while not podcasting today. He'll work on
that's
that.
That's what he's doing.
He'll get that into you pretty soon. That'll be great for spring breakout purposes. Then you can just not, we can't just tell you where a guy is in the top 30. Jonathan will tell you that so-and-so ranks as the 732nd best top 30 prospect.
Stepping to the plate to face number 624 overall.
Yeah, he's working on that right now.
Well, instead of reading off every single name, we thought we could take a look at the list at some superlatives. As I was going through crunching some numbers, I sent a message to Jim and Jonathan and Sam with some a quiz about the top 30 list, and these guys are so busy. They didn't even answer. They didn't even make an attempt. Actually, Jonathan answered one question, but you guys are usually pretty good about answering my quiz questions.
There were too many of them. There was just too many. I didn't want to talk about what I was doing yesterday. Which is going to sound horribly ominous, and we're just going to let that hang there. I can't answer these. I think I know the answers to two of them. Because I know the answer to the Jonathan's question, and I think I know what one of the other questions is going to be because I saw a tweet that I think MLB Pipeline. I think I'm my over under on questions answered correctly is 2.5.
Okay, well here we go. Name the team that has the top 30 list with the lowest average signing bonus.
See, I know the one who's the highest average signing bonus.
Is that the tweet you were referring to?
That's the tweet I saw. So I feel like I know that one. The lowest signing bonus. I had a team that had three non-drafted free agents. That was the Rangers. They got some expensive guys. See, I couldn't even answer questions about my own team. That's how addled my brain is.
This team doesn't have any non-drafted free agents.
Okay, well, see, it's funny. I was going to guess the Dodgers, but they have Gauthier, so it's not them. It's got to be somebody who picks low.
It is one of your teams.
The Yankees spend a lot on international guys, so hold on. I'm thinking here. I'm just thinking through. Oh, it's weird too, because like if you acquire a player from another team, his bonus comes with him though.
Right.
And you said they have no non-drafted free agents?
No non-drafted free agents.
So that eliminates the Dodgers. I'm going to go with the Marlins.
It's not the Marlins, although...
Oh, you know, I wonder if it's the Astros, because they have...
It is the Astros.
Yeah, I should have thought that through, because they had a couple years where they didn't have high picks. And you know, it's funny, we're not going to go into great depth on each of these questions, or that'll be like an hour by itself. The Astros are our biggest conundrum, you know, when we rank farm systems, where we never rank them high. You know, I was just writing their overview the other day. They've been in what, 7 American League Championship Series in a row, which is one short of its AL record, one short of the Braves MLB record. And I think they've had Rookie of the Year votes in the last 5 or 6 years. They've had at least one guy get Rookie of the Year votes every year, and we never rank their system high. Nobody ranks their system high. It's not just us. And they just get these guys. They get these inexpensive international pitchers who wind up becoming good. And to oversimplify things, they basically find guys who hit the ball hard and enhance the other parts of their game. And they find a lot of pitchers, again, I'm oversimplifying this, who have a low release height and great extension. And it just throws batters off, and they help them soup up their stuff a little bit. And a lot of these guys aren't highly regarded. And wind up becoming really effective. You know, your Chaz McCormick's of the world. Or, you know, Christian Javier or guys like that.
They were 30th in our midseason farm system rankings last year. Interestingly, the two teams with the lowest average signing bonuses among their top 30 prospects, Astros and Angels. Angels were number 28 in the midseason farm system rankings, which, by the way, the new farm system rankings for 2024 will be coming out at the end of this week on Friday. But yeah, and those two teams, if you look at the average overall grades for the top 30 list, those two teams are 29th and 30th, but also interestingly,
get what you pay for.
But like the Dodgers are third, have the third lowest.
I would have guessed them because they pick low every year, and Jason, we talk about this all the time. Like they do a great job of developing guys. Like I think they do, and we saw that in Jonathan's executive poll. Other teams feel this way too. They came in first of who gets the most value. I think they came in first and who gets the most value out of the draft, who does the best job developing hitters, who does the best job developing pitchers.
Yeah, and here the stats back it up.
I'm giving myself credit for that answer. Like
you got there.
I didn't think it through, but I like the hint as to who writes the top 30. Okay, is the next question who's the most expensive?
Well, no, but okay. we can mention that because you mentioned the tweet about it, but yeah, the Nationals, and it's by far, by the way, the average overall signing bonus, $2.1 million. The total expenditure in signing bonuses for the top 30 prospects, $63 million, which is almost $15 million more than the next highest top 30. And then you have a group of, I think it's the next 14 teams are all within like a $5 to $10 million window. So it's far and away the highest priced top 30 list.
Yeah, which in a way makes sense because if you draft some high school guys near the top of the draft, they still have Brady House and Elijah Green in their system. Yep. They traded for James Wood. They traded for Robert Hassel. Like, you know, those guys, you know, you're right now they have Dylan Cruz who might not,
who got the huge bonus.
Yeah. I got who counts as $9 million, but he might be gone a year from now. You know, Cade Cavalli got hurt. So his $3 million stays on there. So yeah, interesting. So that I was anticipating that to be one of the questions. I should have had the over under lower. I'm in trouble then.
All right. Next question. This one in a different vein. I find this a little less interesting, but I'm going to hit you with it anyway. Can you name the only 4 top 100 prospects who are among the 200 oldest players on a top 30 list?
Wow.
So is it just the 4 oldest top 100 prospects?
Yeah, no, I got you. I feel like it's probably guys toward the bottom of the list who've been hanging around for a little bit.
Yeah, 3 out of the 4 in the bottom half. One took a long time to get going with his pro career.
Yeah, I don't. Nobody's coming to mind.
The oldest player in the top 100 is Michael Bush.
Oh yeah, I should have had that one. And he was kind of blocked, and he'll okay, makes sense.
Yeah, second oldest, Joey Ortiz, number 63.
Yeah, also blocked. Common theme here. Got traded. Locked into both those guys got traded.
The injured Nick Frasso, another player on one of your teams. And interestingly, not anymore, but there were two organizations involved here. And fourth oldest, Heston Kerstad.
Yeah, who had medical issues, with the myocarditis and everything. Yeah. Okay, interesting.
All right. How about, what's the split between domestic and international prospects among the 900 ranked prospects?
Do I have to get this exactly?
You have to get it exactly right.
See, and this is interesting because if you look at what the major league breakdown is, it's a higher percentage of international guys than there are in our list. But that in part is because you can't go too crazy. Like, we'll rank the big ticket signings, but it's hard to go too crazy on a lot of the international guys until they get to the U.S.
or you just don't have enough.
Especially if it's not a big money guy. Like, if he hits 330 in the DSL, but he signed for $100,000, you don't know how good he is. I'm trying to think of my teams. Okay, 30 teams. I'm going to go 243 international guys.
Damn, that's good.
Is it?
I'll give you credit for getting that right. You almost got it exactly right. It's really? 248.
Wow. Yeah. No, maybe I misread my own calculations and my threes and eight. I was just trying to think, like, it felt like most of my teams had seven or eight international guys. Because we just, for these top 30s, we write overviews and we break them down demographically, which I will say, after having written all the top 30s, I enjoy doing the overviews, Jason, like actually crunching the numbers and figuring out who has the best tools or who has, where the guys came from. It's like, oh, all my top 30s are done. I'll just get lost in the details here. But that's what I was basing it on. Wow. I can't believe it.
Nicely done. All right. Next. Name the only team that has seven players on its top 30 prospects list with an overall grade of 55 or higher.
Cubs.
Nicely done.
Because they have seven top 100 guys. They have seven top 100 guys.
There you go. That was a bit of a giveaway. All right. Name the only team with no players with an overall grade of 55 or higher. There's only one.
Again, see, because we tie this in, like, you can be a 55 and not on the top 100, but the Astros, we deserve a hard time. Astros don't have a top 100 prospect. Jacob Melton might make it very soon, but it's Jacob Melton. See, if I'd known those two questions were on there, I would have upped the over-under to 4.5.
Yeah.
But, I know those are both my teams too, but those are both top 100 related. And I do think Jacob Melton, I will make the bold prediction. Maybe this isn't that bold and people will be like, oh, he should be on there anyway. I think Jacob Melton will be on the top 100 before we do the midseason update. With all the graduations, okay. I think he'll be on there soon.
Name the only team that hasn't acquired at least one of its top 30 prospects by trade.
Oh, and I think this is one of my teams, isn't it?
It is not.
It isn't? Maybe no. I had a team that only had one.
You definitely did.
What? Yeah.
You definitely did. The Astros and Marlins only acquired one by trade. There are three teams that only acquired one by trade. But on average, teams have acquired three of their top 30 prospects by trade.
Okay. You know what? I'm going to think this through. I think it's going to be a contender, although the Marlins
definitely qualify as a contender.
Is it, and it's not one of my teams. I'm going to say the Braves. Well, I was just trying to think since you said it wasn't one of my teams, I did the Yankees. But I knew the Yankees had traded for Clayton Beter and they traded for Yorbit Vivas. So I was just trying to think of contenders who weren't my team. I oddly have a number of consistent contenders because I have the Dodgers, the Yankees, the Astros. So there you go.
All right, flip side, name the team that has acquired the most top 30 prospects by trade, 11 of them.
Ooh.
I thought this one was going to be easier.
I don't think this is my team, right?
Or is it? It is not.
Yeah, because I know the White Sox acquired a bunch, but I don't remember having a team with 11.
Yeah, White Sox acquired 9, which is second.
Okay, yeah, I knew they had a bunch.
I can give you a hint, which is that this came up in the executives poll in the question about which team.
Is it the Rays?
It is the Rays, yep.
Okay.
Don't trade your prospects to the Rays, people.
Well, you know what's crazy as a sidebar is that the Dodgers have kind of a high number for a team that always contends. And this offseason alone, they went out and acquired Jackson Ferris, Zahir Hope, Trey Sweeney, and they just got another guy. Who am I forgetting? They acquired 4 guys this offseason just by trading guys to clear 40-man roster space. In addition to having Nick Frassa, who you mentioned, and River Ryan, and they're all running together for me. Like 3 of their top 5 or 6 prospects are guys they traded for. So even though the Dodgers are winning every year, they're going out and trading for guys too. Kyle Hurt, who was their pitcher of the year. And then the other guy they traded for recently they just traded for Noah Miller with the Twins. But the Dodgers have a kind of an unusual amount of trade acquisitions on their top 30 for a team that has, I think, was 11 playoff appearances in a row or 12. Anyway, but yeah, it's
yeah.
Do not trade with the Ray. I mean, Junior Caminero is one of the best prospects in baseball. And I'll ask you a quick question. Do you remember who Junior Caminero got traded for?
I should know this because I feel like it's been in his blurb for years. Reliever, right?
Never played in the big leagues to this point.
Is it a reliever?
Curtis Meade is the guy who got traded for the reliever.
Oh, that's okay.
Second part of the question. But, they 2 of their top 3 prospects, both top 100 guys they got in trades.
And who did Caminero get traded for?
Tobias Myers, who
that's right.
I think is on his second or third team since Cleveland acquired him for Junior Caminero. And then it was Christopher Sanchez is who the Phillies got in exchange for Curtis Meade.
Okay. Name the 2 teams tied for the most homegrown players on their top 30 list with 29.
Well, wait a minute. So if you have a team that had no traded players, they'd have to have 30, wouldn't they?
Rule 5.
Oh, interesting. Interesting.
Braves had 2 rule. See, rule 5, guys.
This is already like we were just talking about this and I've already forgotten who we talked about, who I had with,
the Astros are one
of them, aren't they? Aren't the Astros one of them?
Yes, they are.
Because I know I'm trying to think. Are they? And is the other one not my team?
Correct.
And I feel like we just mentioned them, but I can't remember who the other one was. So who's
we did? One? We did, and it's the same 2 teams that have the lowest overall average signing bonus: the Astros and the Angels.
Okay.
29 of 30 players on their top 30 list come from either international or draft.
See, it seems like that wouldn't, interestingly to me, that wouldn't collate because if I have the least expensive prospects, like I'd be more apt to go out and trade for some. I don't know. Who knows?
All right. Name the team that has acquired the most top 30 prospects via the draft. 23. Not one of your teams.
Is it the Orioles?
I don't think you're... No. I don't know if I have a good hint for you, and I'm not sure you're going to get this one. I'll just tell you it's the Royals.
I was going to say, it's got to be somebody who's not doing very well internationally. And, like, it's tough. Like, that's why I guess the Orioles, who only recently have kind of taken the plunge back in.
Right. Now, the Royals have the second fewest international signees on their top 30 list with 3, second to the A's. All right. Name the team that has acquired the fewest top 30 draft prospects via the draft with 9.
9. Is that one of my teams?
It is one of your teams.
Yeah. I feel like who was this? I'm thinking this through.
We've talked about them plenty.
Yeah, it's like my top 30 fatigue is now like I'm not.
You talked extensively about the number of prospects they acquired via trade, which puts a dent in the.
Oh, is it the White Sox?
No, it's the Dodgers.
Oh, okay.
Which is kind of surprising considering, you know, we talked about, you talked about how, you know, they get the best value out of the draft, but only 9 of their top 30 came from the draft.
You know, and I think that's more a tribute to that they're very good internationally and they've made a lot of trades than it is that they aren't as good in the draft. Because they've had guys like this year alone, Bobby Miller and Emmett Sheehan and James Altman. And, you know, those guys were all draft picks and they traded Michael Bush to get 2 prospects. So, yeah, I think that's more reflective of how good they are in every area of talent acquisition than that they're not drafting well, if that makes sense.
Yep. And the last 2 questions we basically have answered already. You said you knew the one that Jonathan had answered previously. Name the team that has acquired the most top 30 prospects via the international market.
And that was the Angels, wasn't it?
It was the Angels with 16.
Huh.
And then the flip side, the team that's acquired the fewest top 30 prospects via the international market.
Was that the Royals? Is that what we?
No. Well, the wait a second. The Royals had, they were second. They had the most by draft, but they had the second fewest international with 3. Just have a second to this team, the A's.
Oh, right. You mentioned the A's also.
Up 2. Yeah. All right. Well, that's sort of a look at the top 30 list. And make sure you're hitting up MLB.com/pipeline for all those top 30 lists. We've got scouting reports, scouting grades, tool grades, video stats. Well, we have a new feature on the prospect rankings pages if you haven't seen it yet. If you look at the headshots for each of the players on the list, there's a little circle around those headshots, which indicates that there is video. There's a highlight reel there to watch. You click on that, pops up what we call a tap story, and you can tap right through and see the most recent highlights from all those players, which will be freshened up as we get into the season. So,
well, I knew we were doing tap stories, Jason, but I did not realize that's what the circle around the player's head meant.
Yeah.
I'm learning something from our podcast.
Yeah, there you go. All right, let's take a break, come back, and we'll hear from Padres lefty Robbie Snelling. That's coming up next on the MLB Pipeline Podcast.
It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
Welcome back to the MLB Pipeline Podcast. Jonathan Mayo here on a gorgeous morning in Peoria, Arizona. And I'm with one of the best left-handed pitching prospects in the game, and that's Robbie Snelling. Robbie, thanks for taking some time.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So I want to start with the difference between last spring and this spring for you. Because last spring, you're probably kind of trying to get your bearings. What is this all like? And then after the year you had, and then you come in here, like how is your mindset different just based on last year?
Right. I mean, so like you're saying, last year was something new. I mean, it's a huge difference getting thrusted from high school baseball into pro ball. So, I mean, getting acclimated to pro ball and like your first spring training, that's something you'll never get back, which, I mean, I loved every experience that I got from it last year. And then going into the season, like you said, I had a great season. I was very happy with it. I mean, there's always stuff you can take away from it and stuff that you want to capitalize on the next year. But then getting into this spring training, honestly, I feel like it's kind of the same thing as what it was last year. You're not in normal spring training. Big league spring training is completely different. And so, you know, that's just something else that I had to get used to. It was like, you know, my first spring training all over again. You're around a whole new set of guys that you've watched growing up. And then you walk into the locker room and you see your lockers next to Musgrove and Cosgrove, guys that you've watched on TV before and like that you've seen walking around the complex, but you know, you haven't really gotten to talk to them a lot because you're a little separated from them. It's something pretty amazing and pretty surreal, but you know, you just kind of accept it and absorb it and act like you've been there before is kind of my motto. And you know, stay out of the way for the most part of it and kind of interject when you need to, but it's been a great experience.
I was going to ask you about that, because how do you find that balance of the fanboy part of you and the act like you've been there before, right? You have to kind of strike that balance where like, all right, I need to shut up and listen, but I also want to make it seem like I belong here.
Yeah, I feel like the big thing for myself coming into spring training was, you know, I came into it just trying to be a sponge as much as I could, just absorb as much information that I can. I was lucky enough to be lockered next to some really good big leaguers. So being able to be there, ask questions, sit back and just watch how they interact with people in the locker room and just see, you know, how you should act as a big leaguer in there. Because if you're in there, I mean, they have a plan for you and obviously they see something in you. And so you might as well start acting like a big leaguer as early as you can, so once you do get up there, it's nothing new to you and there's no shock. I mean, the fanboy part of it, it's pretty crazy being around the guys that you're around, but you don't really want to show it because they get so much of that, you know, outside of the game, and they get into the locker room and that's a spot where they want to be able to relax and like not have to worry about people staring at them or asking them stupid questions. But I mean, other than that, it's been a great experience and just kind of absorbing it all.
I think that if I were to pick a major league pitcher to have a young prospect be with on a day-to-day, it might be Joe Musgrove. And he was in your shoes. I talked to him as a prospect, but just in terms of his work ethic and how he goes about it, you know, what are some of the things you've been able to sort of glean from him, even without asking questions, just watching how he conducts himself?
I mean, he's done a great job. He's a great leader, not only for young guys, but like seeing the you know, tenured guys that rally around him and you know, see him as that leader on the team. It's pretty cool to see that he just has that presence in the locker room and on the field. I've been pretty lucky to be able to have him as a catch partner for almost every day that we've been out here for spring training. So, you know, I get to kind of learn firsthand, like, what his work ethic is, specific stuff that he works on in catch play, stuff that he does in his weightlifting. And it's pretty crazy to sit back and you're like, okay, this guy's a pretty good baseball player, but now I get to see in depth, like, what makes him so good, why, you know, the work that he puts in, how does it make him so good, and, you know, why does he do the things that he does?
Let me ask you, so go back to the year that you had, and you said, like, I can't imagine you wouldn't feel good about the year you had. Like, coming into the year, I would imagine for a high schooler, like, let me just get through the season healthy, make all my starts because it's a long year. Did you ever in a million years think, you know what, I'm going to end the year in double A?
It's funny. I that was kind of my goal for myself at the beginning of the season. You know, balancing football and baseball in high school was something that was not hindering, because I don't regret it at all, and I wouldn't go back and change anything about it. But I mean, I definitely wasn't advanced as some of the other pitchers and players just in the draft with me. So I felt that, you know, once I got a full season in of, you know, just baseball, doing baseball training and nothing but baseball, I felt like my ceiling was really, really high. So, coming into spring training, it was my goal for myself. I felt like, you know, with dedicating everything to baseball and, you know, the coaches that were surrounding me and everything that I had seen and learned in spring training, I felt that, you know, just a full season of that under my belt could end it in double A.
Okay. I mean, we saw that too. You know, you're in my area of the draft, so like I knew about the ceiling, and a lot of times guys who were multi-sport guys take that step, but it can take a little bit longer. I think the thing that might have been surprising to those of us on the outside was how fast you made that leap forward and made adjustments, you know, every time the phone rang for you to move up.
Right. I mean, I just give credit to my coaching staff for that. It's just everybody that I had at the affiliates with me, you know, kind of understood you know, where I was at and things that I needed to work on and things that I didn't need to work on. So we just tackled the stuff that I needed to work on. And I felt like, you know, like I was saying, I'm being a sponge here in spring training. I was doing that same thing during the season because they're going to do nothing but try and help me. So, you know, taking in the things that I felt that were valuable that they were trying to teach me and things that I liked and that worked best for me. And I just took them and I worked on them every day. And, you know, it turned out to be what it turned out to be.
You know, each level you moved up, there's an adjustment to maybe the environment, the different level of competition. What are some of the things that each time you sort of figured out, and it seemed pretty quickly, and I know the game is still the game, you know, you trust what you can do, but like, what were some of the things that you recognized that you were able to adjust to pretty quickly each time, especially that jump to Double A, a lot of people have said for years, is that's in a lot of ways the hardest one. And it seemed that you were able to kind of figure that out quickly and continue to do what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, so I during this last season, I was huge in taking notes on hitters that I was going to be facing. You know, coming up to that week, you're only throwing once against a team in the series and the teams that I was playing on because we were on a six-man rotation. So, you know, most of the time I was later in the week during my start. So if I could take notes throughout that entire week, I'm already seeing the hitters that are hitting. And so, you know, taking those notes and seeing the guys that you're going to be facing, I think that really helped me because, you know, I already had three games under my belt before I pitched in that fifth game. And so you could see tendencies on hitters and really just kind of became a student of the game from that aspect. And catchers taught me that. And, you know, that's Villar, my catcher that I had with me in low A and high A, really started me on that. My first couple of starts in low A just, you know, told me this is going to be really good for you. And it helped me a lot. And so I just continued that. And, I mean, really, it was just going into the game and trusting the studying that I had done the week before and, you know, like you said, trusting my stuff and knowing that it's going to work. I felt that once I got to Double A, you know, you're facing guys that have big league time and guys that some of them are rehabbing and tenured up in the big league. So, you know, they know what they're going up to the plate looking for. So if you can stay away from that stuff and then if you do need to throw the pitch that you know that they're probably looking for, you got to be able to put it where you need to. So that was huge for me. It's just that was another part of the game that I worked on a lot last year and it worked out really well.
You mentioned at the outset that, yes, I'm pleased with the year, but there are obviously takeaways. You know, what were some of the things that you saw, especially probably during that time in Double A, because you start recognizing how close you are to the ultimate goal. Like, what are some of the things that you took in your offseason saying, I kind of have a sense of what I need to work on so I can keep climbing?
Mm-hmm. I mean, just consistency. I feel like that's the big separator from big leaguers to, you know, guys that are in Double A and Triple A is they can be consistent as much as they want to be. So, you know, consistency in zone with all your pitches. You know, my changeup as I got to Double A, it was a pitch that I loved going to, but I felt that it could be definitely better. And so that's something that, you know, worked on all offseason, worked on this spring training, and I'm excited to use this next year because it's at a spot where I'm really happy with it right now. So I think I have three really solid pitches that I can go into this year with, and hopefully we can see what happens with it. But, yeah, I mean, consistency, being able to manage the running game, and, you know, little stuff that, you know, it's not physical anymore. It's just the mental side. You know, I feel like 90% of it, 85-90% of it's physical, and then the other 10%, which is probably the most important, is the mental side of it. So really just training that and, you know, getting down and learning all that stuff. So once I get up to the big leagues, it's not a shock when you got runners on, Trey Turner's on second base, you know, and you don't freak out because he's probably going to steal third. So
I thought you were going to quote Yogi Berra there for a second. You know, his famous line is, it's, you know, 90% of the game is physical and the other 50% is
right.
Mental.
Yeah.
But you added up to 100%, so yeah. Kudos to you doing that on the fly. You talked about your changeup and having the three pitches. You know, so much is talked about sort of pitch design and things like that. The changeup that you throw now, is it basically the same as the one you had? Like, how has that evolved? Obviously, you're throwing it more and you're committing to it, but, like, take me through, like, the process of what does it mean to work on your changeup?
Yeah, I mean, I went through a whole bunch of different grips. I probably went through six different grips with trying to figure out, you know, what works best for my arm slot, what works best for, you know, how I pronate or supinate or, you know, how it comes out of my hand. Trying to figure out what laces to play off of and what's going to have the best work throughout the zone. It was a crazy process, but repetition of it and getting to where, like you said, where I'm confident in throwing it and, you know, having emphasis behind, you know, trusting the pitch that you're throwing that you've worked on and put so much time into. That I feel like that was the big thing for me, because I didn't throw it at all in high school. And so getting to a point, you know, in pro ball, you have to throw it. You got to show that you have three pitches. So trusting it was the huge thing for me. I wouldn't say it was a mental block. It was just something that, you know, I had to, my eyes had to believe it to for my body to want to throw it. So
you miss football at all?
I do a little bit. I don't regret, like I said earlier, I don't regret the choice that I made. But, you know, being on the football field is something that I miss for sure. It's a different atmosphere.
Now, I think when you're from Nevada and you play baseball, I think people just assume you're from Las Vegas.
Yeah.
Is there I could see right there. There's a little chip on your shoulder. People from Reno, I feel like they feel that there's a little chip there. Does that give you a little extra fuel?
I don't think that there's really a chip about it. I think it's just funny to watch people's reactions when they ask if I go to the Vegas all the time. And then I tell them that Vegas is about 7 to 8 hours
it's
away from
state.
Reno. Yeah. And they're like, "Whoa, wow, really?" And I'm like, yeah, there's only about 3 or 4 major cities in all of Nevada. So, it's I wouldn't say it's a chip. It's more of just a funny conversation piece with guys when they ask.
I live in Pennsylvania, I live in Pittsburgh, and people right. are like, "Oh, near Philadelphia." Yeah. I'm like, "No, it's a big state, opposite end." So 3 levels last year. 3 levels this year lands you in San Diego. Do you have a similar goal, or you're trying not to look that far ahead?
I like to be kind of where my feet are. So right now I'm in Arizona. So we're going to finish spring training wherever they send me, they're going to send me. And, you know, trying to capitalize on what I did last year and just kind of continue and keep going with the stuff that I've learned this spring training and this past off season. And, you know, if that lands me in San Diego at some point this year, that's awesome. But I'm not going to put all my eggs in that basket. I'm super excited for every opportunity that they're going to give me this year potentially. And so, you know, if I have a successful year this year, then I'll be very happy with it.
My last question for you, Major League Baseball this year unfolding this new idea, the spring breakout game. As we're talking now, things haven't been set, so I don't, you know, even know whether you're going to be in that game. But what do you think about the idea of having, like, all the top prospects in this organization on the field at one time, from A-ball up to AAA, and being able to compete against another team's prospects?
I think it's awesome. I mean, you're taking in all of the, you know, most of the game's top players, and you get to kind of see what teams have in their shoots, and guys that are going to be coming up through the systems. And, you know, I think it's awesome that we're going to get a chance, because at some point most of those guys are going to be in the big leagues and we're going to be playing against each other anyway. So I think it's awesome that you know, you get to know those guys, get to see them, see stuff that they might be working on. And then it'll be cool to fast forward and see them in the big leagues and be like, "Hey, you weren't doing that 4 years ago." It'll be pretty cool. Like you said, it's new, so it's going to be something learning pains and growing pains for everybody that's a part of it and kind of getting used to it. But I think that it's going to be some really good stuff for the game.
All right, Robbie, thanks very much. Good luck the rest of the spring.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
We're going to take a break. We'll be right back with more on the MLB Pipeline Podcast.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome back to the MLB Pipeline Podcast. I'm Jason Ratliff here with Jim Callis. Thanks to Robbie Snelling for taking the time to talk to Jonathan Mayo out in Arizona. Jim is fresh off of his trip to Florida. And Jim, you got to see a lot of a lot of interesting stuff out there, including you kind of got famous one day. We've been touting the Skeens Holiday matchup and the fact that, you know, the Pirates are playing the Orioles on the first day of spring breakout, and we could see Skeens versus Holiday. And, you know, fans have been worked up about that. And then kind of got scooped a little bit. They're going to face each other before spring breakout. But then the game wasn't broadcast. And in steps Jim, the hero, who was behind the plate, shot video of that first matchup, as well as Skeens versus Adley, another 1-1 versus 1-1 matchup. And people were singing your praises for getting that out there, because had you not done that, there'd be no evidence that it ever occurred.
Yeah, and it was funny, because I was trying to get into position to get – Holiday led off the game against Paul Skeens, or led off the bottom of first. So I was trying to get in position, and I was set up, and then there was like an empty seat where it was like perfect, like almost right behind on plate. You know, it was in the section where they have the seats. And if, you know, you're accompanied by somebody with a wheelchair, they put the wheelchair next to you. And this was open, so I went in and got the seat. But like the first pitch, I actually goofed, Jason. My camera was on camera, so I'm getting ready to shoot it. I'm like, damn it, it's taking a picture. What the hell? and then it was a 2-pitch at bat, so it was very shaky video of Jackson Holiday.
Wait a second, did you sit in a handicapped seat to take this video?
No, there was nobody using it. There was somebody. I did not.
Okay.
Push anybody out of the way. I wasn't like, there was somebody sitting there with a wheelchair and I made their person who was with them leave. It was a good spot to shoot from. Okay. So no, I did not park in any handicapped spots, and I did not take a seat away from anybody who needed it.
Do you have any video of Wilt Chamberlain's 100-point game?
I don't think that happened, because there's no video. but the interesting thing to me, though, so in this matchup, it was pretty cool. You know, Skeens hit 102. I think he only threw 10 pitches in a 1-2-3 inning, hit 102 twice. Jackson Holiday, you know, rolled over on 100-mile-an-hour fastball, so I got that. And then he faced Adley Rutschman. So it was back-to-back number one overall picks versus number one overall picks. And in both of these videos, there's three number one overall picks, Jason, because Henry Davis is catching. So how about that? We had four number one overall picks in this game.
Yeah, that was great.
Adley Rutschman takes a 101-mile-an-hour ball and then hit a 99-mile-an-hour fastball to the warning track that didn't quite get out. But for whatever reason, and the Adley Rutschman video was longer than my Jackson Holiday video, almost four times as many likes of the Adley Rutschman video than there were of the Jackson Holiday video, which surprised me. I don't know if it was because it was longer. It wasn't like the cinematography was any better on the second one. But yeah, that kind of surprised me. But that was a pretty cool matchup. I got to talk to both Paul Skeens the day before when I was in Bradenton and Jackson Holiday. There's also, I know I shared it with you guys when I was interviewing Paul Skeens, the way the camera angle was, he was in the foreground and I was like more in the background. We weren't side by side. So Paul Skeens is what, listed at 6'7"? Does that sound right?
I think that's right.
And I once was 6 foot, but you shrink as you get older. I'm probably like 5'10" and a half, but the way they shot it, I swear to God, I put a picture up, I think on my Twitter feed, it looks like the shot of Aaron Judge standing next to Jose Altuve. That's how tiny I look. But anyway, it was fun.
One of my favorite photos of all time in the minor leagues was when,
Randy Johnson. You know,
now I was going to say when Luke Van Mill and Chris Cates, are those the right names for teammates?
There was a guy, I know what photo you're talking about, and I was going to say when I was at Baseball America, we had a black and white photo of Randy Johnson, and I believe it was Mel the Gnat Houston. that was his nickname, who was listed at 5'9 and was probably 5'7 standing next to. But yeah, I forgot about Chris Cates. Yeah,
because Chris Luke Cates Van Mill was like 7'1",
and Chris Cates was like 5'5", right? Played at Louisville.
Yeah, they were the tallest and shortest players in the minor leagues at the time, and they were teammates for Beloit, maybe.
Anyway. And I think they probably broke the record because Randy Johnson and Mel Houston were teammates in the Expos system.
Wow. And so, yeah, you and Skeens are.
We're part of that great tradition. But yeah. Anyway, you know, Skeens was good. Anytime I run the LSU guys, I just talk about how much I just marvel at how well. I mean, it was a good program, obviously, to start with. How Jay Johnson just has that thing running like a well-oiled machine at LSU, and then you know, Jackson again, just so polished. I mean, he's gonna be 20 all season. Just reminds me kind of Bobby Witt Jr. You know, guy grew up around the game, was famous, gets asked to do 8 million media requests, always seems very good natured. I just feel like the Orioles are in such good hands, not just from a talent standpoint, but when you have guys like Adley Rutschman and Jackson Holliday who are going to be, you know, establishing your culture, I think the Orioles are going to be really good for a long time.
So from there, I don't know your exact route, but you also got a chance to talk to a couple of highly ranked pitchers. No one is highly ranked as Skeens, obviously, but Hurston Waldrop and Ricky Tiedemann.
Yeah, you know, Waldrop was interesting. So, you know, we're doing these interviews, and, you know, you taught me to have a couple minutes to talk to the guy beforehand, but it's pretty cool. You know, they're doing like 3-minute interviews for MLB Network, so we're not getting into, you know, his whole life story. Although, Jason, I've got to learn my lesson. I need to stop asking players who are from Georgia if they were recruited by my beloved University of Georgia Bulldogs, because Hurston Waldrop was not. And I was just like,
another one who wasn't.
I mean, Scott Strickland, loved, you know, was very happy Georgia hired him, like Scott Strickland. I could keep hearing that from too many guys in Georgia. Anyway, new coach, Wes Johnson. We'll see what happens. I did talk to Paul Skeens about Wes Johnson, because that was his pitching coach at LSU. He's now head coach at Georgia. Anyway, the most interesting thing about Hurston Waldrop. Well, it's funny. I will say Paul Skeens was telling me that he was surprised. I was telling him how much I enjoyed doing the draft with Jay Johnson last year. And Paul's like, yeah, I'm kind of surprised Jay did the draft. And I'm like, well, I said, you shouldn't be surprised at all. That's like a great recruiting tool. Like, you and Dylan Cruz are going 1-2. You guys just won the national championship. Like, of course Jay Johnson's going to do the draft. Why wouldn't he? Like, that's a great recruiting tool. And he was telling me how when they're on the road, Jay Johnson's wife drives him around, and Jay Johnson's just recruiting 24/7 from the driver's side. But anyway, Hurston Waldrop, the most interesting thing with Hurston was, you know, his big time pitch is a splitter. Like, that just, like, I think it was 60% swing and miss in college and 60% swing and miss in pro ball. And he got up to AAA last year in his debut. So I asked him, like, where'd you pick this up? He picked it up in like a YouTube video of Kevin Gossman. He was at Southern Miss. This is before he transferred to Florida as a sophomore, or maybe he's a freshman. He was at Southern Miss. He wasn't getting lefties out. And he just decided, oh, I need a splitter. So he goes on YouTube. He sees how Kevin Gossman throws his splitter. And I think he said that was like a Wednesday or Thursday. And that weekend, it was like a Saturday. He throws it, and it's like the wipeout splitter. Like, immediate wipeout splitter. Like, that I couldn't believe that story. That was probably the story that floored me the most.
It's just like looking up a recipe online.
I think what we should do is, I'm going to try that. I'm getting ready to go out to Arizona. I'm going to look up this Kevin Gossman YouTube video, and then I'm going to go throw some splitters when I'm out in camp, and maybe somebody will sign me.
Yeah, see what you can do.
Yeah, but he said it wasn't even trial and error. He just saw how he threw it, and he went out and did it, and bam, it was immediately like his best pitch.
All right, and then you got a chance to talk to Ricky Tiedemann as well.
Yeah, we wrapped it up with Ricky Tiedemann and Spencer Jones. And, you know, Tiedemann, you know, has had a hamstring strain. You know, he was hurt a little bit last year too, which is why we got to see him in the fall league, where he was pitcher of the year. He was talking about one aspect I thought was interesting in the fall league, not just getting back on the mound and dominating and getting your confidence back, but he's talking about just getting those extra innings in the fall league will add to the number of innings that he can pitch this year, because you don't want to go too crazy in upping. I don't remember how many innings he pitched in the minor leagues last year. I think it was 40-ish. And so anyway, but and then it was funny. So, you know, one of the questions that's interesting about Ricky is it's plus fastball, it's plus slider, plus changeup. And so I said, I got to ask you, because like I can talk to three different scouts, and three different guys will tell me that one of those pitches is your best pitch. You know, I'll get three different answers. And so it was funny. So I asked him the question, and he kind of talked about how great all three pitches were for him, how much he has confidence in how they worked. And so they were like, at all, you know, on any given day. And I'm like, no, you got to pick one. Like I said, over the course of the season, what's your best pitch? And he went with the changeup. So I thought that was interesting. And then Spencer Jones, we had time constraints because Aaron Boone was so eloquent. It cut into my time for my Spencer Jones interview, Jason. So I only got to ask him three questions, but it was good. You know, he kind of broke into, if you're going to come to spring training, go to big league camp. Pretty nice to hit a 470-foot home run in your first at bat, which is what he did. He crushed the ball. So we talked a little bit about that. I didn't get a chance to talk to him as much as the other guys, but it was fun. The two best parts about spring training are getting to talk to players. You know, it's kind of like the fall league in that way. You get a lot of access to players. And then on my trip to Arizona, I believe minor league games will start happening. And then being able to watch multiple games at once on the backfields and take in a lot of talent. That's the most enjoyable part for me.
All right. Well, Jim, talking about seeing a lot of talent, we are about to see more prospect talent at one time in one place than ever before with spring breakout. We've talked about this at length, but we are now 2 days away from the roster reveal and just over a week away from the games themselves. I think a lot of people are very excited about this. Again, some of the high level points here. It's March 14th through the 17th, 4 days of games. Each organization will be fielding a roster primarily made up of its top prospects, working off of our top 30 prospects list. Two games on the 14th, five on the 15th, seven on the 16th, and two on the 17th, all taking place at spring training venues, most of them as doubleheaders with the big league spring training games. What am I leaving out here, Jim? Almost all of them will be able to be seen on MLB Network, MLB.tv, MLB.com, the local RSNs carrying some of them. What else, Jim?
I think we're allowed to say we can't say who's in the game yet because they haven't been officially revealed, but just to whet people's appetite, I think we're going to look at roughly 70 top 100 prospects are going to be in this, 70 out of 100, and roughly I think it's like 550 something, and the rosters are going to change, but at least close to 2/3 of the players will be top 30 prospects. I think you hit the highlights. You know, there will be, MLB Network is doing its own production. Like it will be, I think, Greg Amsinger, Mark DeRosa, and our very own Jonathan Mayo. Are you allowed to have two Penn guys in the booth at the same time? Two guys from the University of Pennsylvania? I didn't know about that. Like, but anyway, that'll be March 15th.
Need to get Amsinger an honorary degree before the broadcast.
Well, they could work. I mean, Jonathan, when he's done ranking the top 900 prospects in order from 1 to 900, can get on that. But so that game will be March 15th at 2 p.m. Eastern. There will be five other games that will be broadcast live on MLB Network, I guess pulling in from RSNs, including this time, you don't need me. I'll be in Arizona. I can't give you video of Paul Skeens versus Jackson Holliday, but
we'll see what they can do.
You won't need that because that'll be March 14th at 7 Eastern. And I'm looking forward to broadcasting three games I know of right now, and maybe it'll be four, but three games. Jill Guerin and I will be doing the Reds and Rangers on the 14th and the Brewers and Royals on the 17th. I believe those are MLB digital games.
And yeah, you're bookending the thing. You got the very first game and the last one.
You know, I'm going to be excited about seeing my boy Jacob Mizorowski on March 17th. And I can talk again about how he's robbed of the Futures Game MVP. And then I'll be on the Marquee Network doing the White Sox Cubs game with those seven top 100 prospects on the Cubs side. And the White Sox have two, but have a very, very vastly improved farm system. I think that's going to be one of the more loaded games in terms of quality of prospects. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And then where I'll be March 16th is TBA, but I will be taking in at least one game. And I've already calculated this, Jason. The White Sox Cubs game, I believe, starts. I had the schedule and I've lost track of it. The White Sox Cubs game on the 15th is a 2 p.m. Arizona time game.
Right.
I think that's right. But I think I can, because it's in Mesa, it's Sloan Park, I think I can then go catch the end of Giants Athletics, which is also in Mesa.
There you go.
I'm done with the Cubs game because that starts 2 hours later. So I think I'm going to get to see the last four or five innings of Giants Athletics. So I'm excited about that. I do think all three Arizona games on March 16th start at roughly the same time. So I'm not going to be able to,
that's right,
double up that day. But I will get to see, I think, four full games and half of a fifth. I'm very excited about this. And I get to finish up with Jacob Mizrowski.
Yeah, so MLB.com/springbreakout has everything you need there. Full schedule, ticket links, and rosters will be out again on Thursday morning, 11 o'clock Eastern. Tune into MLB Network or you can watch on MLB.com. All right, let's wrap up with a question here from the mailbag, and it comes from blah, blah. Twitter handle is blah, blah, 923-425-24. And Jim, I see you've selected a question about...
I get the answer for Jonathan, too. I get the answer for Jonathan as well as me.
You selected a question where Jonathan cannot defend himself. The question is, which prospect in the top 100 do you and Jonathan disagree about most? So interesting that you picked this one for this week. But go ahead and tell us why Jonathan is wrong about this top 100 prospect.
Well, it's crazy because even though they're the best hitter and pitcher in baseball, Jonathan thinks Jackson Holliday and Paul Skeens are just not going to make it and not be very good. And it's baffling to me. No, seriously, Jonathan does not feel that way. But I picked the question because I guarantee if you slack to Jonathan before he hears the podcast and say, we took this question, who do you think Jim picked? He'll know if he thinks about it for a minute who it will be, because I didn't have to think about this. It's Justin Crawford with the Phillies, who's super interesting. And Jonathan, I know, I guess I should look at where he is ranked exactly on our top 100. I don't have that. I should have done this prep already, Jason.
But this makes sense because this is the profile you dislike.
Well, there's a part of the profile I don't like, especially that worries me. So he's number 77 on our top 100. I think Jonathan would have him in the top 50, and I would like to see more before I buy all in. Here's the issue with Justin Crawford. And look, there's probably people going, what is Jim talking about? The dude hit 332 in his first full season of pro ball, 859 ops. He slugged 467, 75 runner, good center fielder, et cetera, et cetera. The issue I have that worries me about Justin Crawford, and we actually, there's probably a heated exchange on Slack between me and Jonathan about this when we were finalizing the top 100 with Sam Dykstra, is I don't like the speed guy who's kind of a slappy hitter. And I do think Justin Crawford has some strength to him. So I don't think he's necessarily quite that profile. But even though he hit 332 last year, he hit three home runs, he had 33 extra base hits. He had a 3.7 ground out to air out ratio. And I know I was talking to a team, like, I won't get the exact, but what do you think his average launch angle was last year, Jason?
Oh man. I have no idea. I don't
just pick again. Like I think, and I like, this is terrible. Cause I think you kind of want to be around, like if you're hitting the ball, driving the ball in the air for power, and I'm probably going to butcher this, and Mike Petriello will probably like spit up his coffee if I'm wrong. I think you want around, you know, in the 20 degree area is like optimal. But I think Justin Crawford's average launch angle, from what a team was telling me, if I remember,
single digits.
No, it was -5. Like it was his launch angle was down, and so it's such an extreme ground ball profile that at the lower levels in the minors, and he spent most of the year in single A, the defenses aren't as good. The fields are harder, and he could fly, like he's a great runner. Like, I just want to see how that plays at higher levels. So he would be the guy that we probably disagree about the most. And I think we'll ask Jonathan next week. I think he would agree with that.
He'll agree about who you disagree about.
Yes, he will say that he will know. And if you slack him today, I bet he will come up with that as his answer.
All right, I'm going to do it.
Okay.
Right after this.
And that's then we have DJ the producer. You could come on. You can record like a little extra. You can record it on your phone, then DJ can work it into the podcast about what Jonathan's
answer. Jonathan defending himself.
Yes.
All right. We'll make all that work. That's going to do it for this week's episode of the MLB Pipeline Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss an episode. If you're enjoying the show or have any suggestions, leave us a rating and a review. Thanks, everybody. See you next week.